Tempe Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts cast. Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Matt Dainley. Coughing through the intro, nothing better than that. Got my man Chris Blystone here from Stampede Blues. Well, Chris, what's up?
How's it going, Matt? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, another perfect start to the show. Seeing what I can do. Can't even name the show correctly, man. we're going to be taking some listeners' calls, folks. So in about 10:45, we're going to open up the lines, see if you guys aren't watching whatever that pay-per-view is, WWE or whatever. Hook us up with a call if you got a question, you want to talk about the draft or whatever. It may be 574-626-8689. Chris, let's talk about this. One of our esteemed colleagues, Steven, put a question out to us earlier before the show, and it goes something like this. What will it take to really wow Chris Ballard in a trade? He just got a plus 40% deal to move back three spots from the Jets. Is he looking for a similar deal, or would it need to be greater? This is probably the thing, you know, this is something that we wanted to talk about a little bit throughout the show to begin with. But, I mean, think about that. He basically got blown away with that deal. Would you agree with that, with the Jets?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are some people who have tried to kind of spin it like maybe he didn't get as much. But anybody who really knows the game and knows, you know, what's going on, he killed. And I don't think the Jets really lost. I think we actually talked about this. Mm-hmm. I might have been on the show right after this trade happened. And you know, nobody's really complaining that from the Jets organization if they get their guy. But really, I mean, he kind of took them. I mean, 3 second-round picks. I mean, you're talking about a steal. I mean, it's not going to feel quite that way this year because one of those is next year. But, you know, again, next year, if the Jets are still a team on the upswing, you might be talking about a real high pick in the second round again next season, right, or next offseason. So, yeah, great deal. And moved back 3 spots, might still have the opportunity to take the guy he wanted to take. So you got to think if he decides to move back, yeah, you would expect him to be looking for value like that or better.
Right. So what are we talking about with moving back? There's been some talk about Miami. That seems, I don't know. Just from no more than we know about it, it seems kind of unsubstantiated to say something as much as what some people were saying out there as to being close to a done deal, apparently, per McShay. That still seems weird for me. I mean, to be that much, you know, because they don't have a lot of firepower this year. My opinion is if we're talking about wow, right? Okay. So it have to blow him away, Ballard. I don't know that you get that from their one this year and a one next year. Do you? Well, that, I mean, that doesn't settle me, because somebody said that, and I don't remember who they said it, but it'd have to have a one. My opinion, it would have to have that one, but there'd also have to be something attached along the line, and I just don't see that could be, I don't know. I don't know that they've got the firepower that they want to use that much to trade up.
Yeah, I think they'd have to pay more than that. And the other thing is, I don't think Chris Ballard is going to make a deal ahead of time at this point.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. The move from 3 to 6 made a whole lot of sense in advance because he was making sure that he got something he really wanted while the demand was guaranteed to be there. If the Jets could have made a deal with somebody else, if they could have moved up to 4, you know, they might have been content to do that. They know the Colts aren't working. I mean, they could have moved up with the Browns. They could have traded with the Giants. You know, I know everybody said that, you know, they don't deal with the Giants, so that was unlikely. But Chris Ballard has to take that scenario into account. The Colts don't trade with the Patriots either, right, until they do. So they had to take that scenario into consideration. And then, you know, if he gets that value, moves back and gets those picks, now he can kind of sit. Because if somebody that he really wants drops to 6, he takes them. Mm-hmm. But if there's a couple quarterbacks sitting there that several of those teams want, he's not going to trade any time before he has exactly what the picture is in front of him, because he can start that bidding war and say, all right, Miami, Buffalo, you know, whoever else, you know, Arizona, I don't know that they've got the capital to even get in that race. But, you know, those teams that are looking for a quarterback, he can really kind of dangle that thing and say, all right, give me your best offer. Right. And if not, we're going to take the guy that we want and you're out of luck. And so I don't see there's any incentive for him to talk with Miami significantly in advance. And even if he has, whatever he's talked about, I don't think means very much, because as soon as whatever the cards are on the table at that time, happen, the game's coming to, it's going to be a completely different picture. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in that. Maybe he's talked to them. I don't doubt that he has, but I don't think that sets anything in stone.
No, I don't either. And it's hard to follow, because look, we're looking at Buffalo. There's a lot of different teams, I guess, that you could suspect would want to trade up. But some people were saying even something like Chicago, the Bears, might want to step ahead of possibly Tampa if Chubb is still there for the Colts. I don't know. I think that the Colts take Chubb if he's there. I think that's a given. But we're talking about even moving back. So if the Colts are even considering moving back, how far back do you go? What's the is staying in the top 10 necessary for you? Or even is Miami or Buffalo even really an option? I mean, going back to 12, I mean, look, you could add some serious bank right there. I mean, that would be, I think, because Buffalo has the ammo in the draft to do it, right? 12 and 23, one of their seconds or whatever else they've got left in second and third round range. I mean, you could see something like that happening. But at 12, man, you're going to get a good player. But are they still thinking that the premier player is there if that deal's on the table? Is Bradley Chubb or they, you know, they only have one, two, or three elite guys that they would take with that? Or do you think there's more? I mean, and I think how many more? That's the real question, because if they go back to 12, they're going to, I mean, what? They could be at six, they're getting maybe the second or third best player. Depending on what the Giants do, depending on what a couple other, Cleveland for that matter at four as well. But I don't know, man. I mean, what do you do after that? That's the thing. How many of those guys are still left? If you think you got five on the board when you're picking and you want to move back to 11 or 12 and take the chance because you're going to get a bunch of equity in return, I mean...
It really depends on how your board breaks down, because if you look at, if they've got their big board set up and, you know, say that Chubb, Barkley, and Nelson are all off the board for whatever reason by the time that it gets to six, I think that then I really don't have any major problem dropping back to 12.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we've all said many times, Barkley is probably not the ideal pick. But he's obviously considered to be a premium player. And I think, I don't know whether that's driven by Ballard or Irsay, but we keep hearing that from people who are close to the Colts. So we keep hearing his name as mentioned in that grouping with, you know, those premier players. So I think if you get those guys off the board, then you have to really start to say, is there that much difference between, you know, somebody I can get at 12 and somebody that I can get at six, and if it's not one of those three guys? And, you know, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks on the Move the Sticks podcast talk about fairway players. You know, they just, you know, those safe guys who, there are some guys like that in there. There's, you know, somebody like Raquan Smith might be available at 12.
Right.
Tremaine Edmonds might be available at 12. You might have, you know, some of those guys who definitely fit a need, who definitely, are viewed as solid additions to, you know, to fix holes that the Colts definitely do have. Those guys are probably going to be available. So then if you could add all those other picks and you still get a guy that's maybe not the blue chip guy, but you maybe have, maybe you say, we know we're not going to be great this season. We're going to kick that need down, down the road 1 year, and we're going to get some of these safe players that do fill a need. And then we're going to add all this other, you know, opportunity in the second round, maybe another shot at the first round, at second pick. And, you know, yeah, I think that's worth investigating, but it all depends on how the board breaks down before the Colts are picking.
Right. Guys, we're going to open the phone lines here in about 8 minutes. I know I said 10:45, but we're going to wait a couple more extra minutes. We've got a couple more things that we want to talk about. Let's continue into this real quick. Let's finish this conversation here about, you know, the Colts draft situations. Now, where they stand with all those picks in the second round, This is something I brought up, I think, a couple weeks ago in a, I can't remember if it was in an article or on here, but we talked about a little bit about what the Colts could do with those second round picks, just in plain and simple. Colts stay put at six, go to the second round, at least those picks. I mean, we've talked about possibly using a combination of a second round and something else to move up. I mean, do you use a second and a third to get back into the first round when you've still got 2 seconds left? You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, you've still got the second and third to get that. I mean, what they go, okay, so let's just let's say Bradley Chubb's on the table. I don't think they do that, in my opinion. Maybe they do. Maybe they do for a linebacker, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of those positions where it's pretty thin. Like offensive tackle comes to mind, where there's just not a whole lot of those top prospects. And if the offensive, if an offensive tackle you really like is still sitting there at the, you know, late 20s, you might start to consider making that trade back into the first round. But I would, it would not be my preference.
Right. I kind of actually, I'd rather keep the picks. I know the Colts have done a little bit with Slauson and Muhort, but I still think the guys in this draft that carry the most weight, you know, is the guards. I'm not so even sure that I would want them to trade up for even if it was McGlinchey. McGlinchey's really good, but I just think I would rather them stand pat for an offensive lineman. I think if you're going to come back into the first round, it's either got to be that you drafted a guard, you know, Quentin Nelson, one of the best players in the draft, or Saquon Barkley. One way or another, you didn't get Chubb. You didn't get your pass rusher. But you want to come back in for a Harold Landry or, you know, a Sammy Hubbard or something like that. I think that you do that.
I'd be okay with that.
I think you do it for a massive impact player. I don't necessarily think you just do it to get another guy who's really good that fits a need. I think you do that for a guy that can make a difference, not an offensive lineman.
Sure.
So I think that that's a fun thing to think about. But at the same time, you lose the opportunity to play with those picks as you already have and possibly gain more without trading back. Maybe you still end up with three second round things or picks. Maybe you trade your early one, your four pick in the second round for a later pick in the second round and another one. You know what I mean? Or something like that. There's a lot of things that can be done with Chris Ballard right now. And he holds a lot of keys to, I mean, because people are going to want to come up. Chris may want to come up. There's a lot of things that the Colts can do now because of that initial trade back to six. I think this ultimately, one way or the other, is a beautiful thing for the Colts.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your safeties, my man. We're going to switch gears a little bit, guys. My man Chris here scouted the safeties for our Stampede Blue Draft Guide, which should have opened the show like this, but I want to thank all of you who have purchased one. Thank you all for giving us your thoughts on them. We're glad that you like it. It was a lot of work, and a lot of people did a really good job on it. So everybody who was involved in that did an awesome job, and thank you, like I said, guys, if you supported it. We appreciate it, and I know that goes without saying for everybody else as well. But on this draft guide, Chris, let's talk about your top 10 safeties here. The Colts don't necessarily have a need. We kind of discussed this off-air right before going live at safety. Some places suggest that the Colts need a safety. Need doesn't strike me as the word. We talked about that for this safety at that position for this defense. Not right now. There's too many things that need to be figured out in that safety court with, you know, Farley being there. You know, like you said, does Gethers come back full strength? What's everything going on there? Does Hooker come back full strength? A lot of things determine. I don't think you worry about that at draft. So there's some guys at the back end of your top 10 that I don't know anything about, and I want you to tell me about them. Let's talk about a couple of those guys between 8 and 10.
Yeah, well, we mentioned right before we went on, we talked about Cole Reyes as one of those guys. And, you know, he's an interesting study. He's an interesting guy to watch, small school guy, you know, North Dakota. The deal with him, and probably the reason why he's not higher, he's been perpetually injured. He has struggled with injury throughout. I mean, you look at his 2013, 14, 15, and 17, he missed time with significant injuries. When you add that in to the fact that he's, you know, a small school guy, hasn't faced elite competition, that's going to give a lot of GMs pretty significant pause. He is probably a guy, if I had to guess, he's going to go in the mid rounds because he does have, you know, he's got the right size. He's got, you know, he's got the instincts. He's a a good box safety. He really could be. But when you're a box safety who gets injured a lot, I mean, how much risk, you know, how much do you put into that? So if it weren't for the injury, he would be much higher. I really think so.
Is that right?
And he'd be one of those people who I think would probably be a sleeper to probably not go. I don't think he'd break the second round, but, you know, he's probably got that level of talent, but he's too much of a risk. He's just not durable. And I to use the terrible Paganoism, the best ability is availability. And he doesn't really have it. And I don't see a lot of teams jumping on him as a, you know, possibility for anything beyond a possible rotational player.
Right.
So
let's talk about Quinn Blanding too, because he's another one that I've not heard that name.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, so he played almost every defensive snap in his time at Virginia, which gives him this distinction that a lot of guys in this class don't have. This is a really raw safety class. A lot of these guys, just the biggest disadvantage that they have is they just haven't played the game enough. They're switching positions, got some cornerbacks who are moved to safety, or a wide receiver that's playing safety, or played wide receiver basically until, you know, college and made that switch. And he's the most experienced, or one of, not the most experienced, but one of the more experienced guys, and that really helps him. He's got great size. And he's a good instinctive safety, and that is kind of lacking in this group. There's a lot of guys who are very reactive. There's a lot of guys who are just, you know, slow to move to the ball. Blanding is not that. He has really good instincts, and he doesn't get hung up on blocks like a lot of the strong safeties in this class do. Takes good angles, doesn't get lost in all of the junk.
That counts.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And, you know, and he's played against solid competition. He's pretty well proved himself. I think he could be one of those guys who could be a surprise starter for a team if they're in need of a safety, but he's probably going to be best to sit behind somebody and develop a little bit, contribute to special teams. And he's got the athleticism to do it. So he could, you know, possibly be that guy who kind of works his way into an NFL roster. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be an early starter unless he just gets very lucky and lands with the right team.
Right. Have to land with the right roster and have to show at the right time and have just that kind of a, you know, a preseason for that matter. So you've got some really, you've got these three guys at the top of your list here. Everybody's going to know about them, but pick one of those guys, one, two, or three to pick off. I don't want to give your list. I want you to give it. So pick one of those top three and tell me what makes them. I mean, are these top three some pretty close to interchangeable to you, or is obviously your top there for a definite reason?
No, I don't think they're interchangeable, and I have a little bit of a different view on this. Minkah Fitzpatrick is, in my mind, heads and tails above everybody else. His versatility really makes it for him, and it's just, it kind of just springs off the tape when you watch it, that he's just a guy always moving to the ball. You know, he's tough. I mean, he had a bruised kidney that he played through in the national championship game. He can do just about anything. You can watch him in a game, and he gives a team so much of an advantage because he can be all over the field. And he's not going to be a negative really anywhere.
Right.
He's not perfect. He does have, like a lot of those guys who play fast, he can overrun a play or things like that and get himself out of position. But, you know, for the most part, you know, just instinct, overall ball skills, moving to the play and not steps or anything like that, not really biting on a lot of fakes or anything. He's just that guy who's been a consistent player, and he's done it at the highest level of competition. And so you got to have a pretty good feeling for what he's going to be capable of. And then, you know, you got Derwin James who's beneath him, and I'm not as high on James as a lot of people are. He's a freak athlete and he has all of the measurables, but he's a lot, in my mind anyway, he's a lot of a projection. People see what he can be, and what he can be is impressive. I mean, he's got the all of the innate abilities. The big thing that you can't scout on film that I keep hearing about him in doing research, and I tried not really to incorporate this into my film study because this is not something that I can find out firsthand, but you just keep hearing about how he's a leader, about the kind of guy he is. So I think that's probably going to be in his favor. Obviously, that doesn't show up on tape necessarily per se, but the type of teammate and player that he is significant, and everybody talks about the kind of locker room guy that he is. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, he may have an opportunity to really, you know, be a great player. I mean, he definitely has Pro Bowl potential. He brings to the. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I thought you were close to finishing up. But what is your read then on Justin Reed as far as where he's at?
So, I'll be honest. My method of scouting. Safety specifically, the first safety that I ever scouted was Eric Weddle.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember that
I liked the most about Weddle was that he's a solid tackler. He's not an athlete, like a super freak athlete. He has great instincts and he's always moving into the ball. He doesn't let guys get around him. And Justin Reed is just a smart, instinctive guy who is always moving to the right spots. He's not a freak athlete. He is not this overwhelming, you know, athletic talent. He is athletic. He's more athletic than he gets credit for. And his combine numbers are pretty impressive if you actually look through those. And the game tape shows that too. He's not unathletic, but he's not as smooth as some of these, you know, other guys. Somebody like Ronnie Harrison gets a lot of credit for that. And usually most people have got him above Justin Reed, but he's got good combine numbers. He's got, I don't know what this counts for, but he does have the biology going for him. His brother's a, you know, Pro Bowl safety. Strong safety, free agent right now, I think, but got that in his genetics are solid. He's not an elite speed, but I think that because of his instincts, he doesn't find himself in bad position almost at all. I mean, he's in the right spots to make plays. And I don't want to make this comparison because I am just the worst at comparisons, but Eric Weddle is kind of who I thought of when I'm scouting him, of just that ability to find himself in the right spots, despite the fact that he's not the most athletic guy, that he's not just some overwhelming force on the field. And I think he still has the ability even to play up in the box and be kind of a versatile guy. I would think for him personally, I think he needs to be in coverage, or maybe if he could, you know, play the slot or things like that. He's got good ball skills and really just let him play off those instincts and develop. And I think he could be a really good safety that somebody gets, sneaks into the second round, and, you know, could be a really good pickup for somebody.
Interesting. Yeah. Who was the funnest to watch out of those top three then for you that you really just enjoyed the most?
Kaiser White. Kaiser White. Now, I mean, obviously that's not one of those guys. So yeah, Minka was the most fun of those three guys. I totally didn't answer your question, but Kaiser White was the most fun prospect to watch, period. Like just of the guys, because he came completely out. It came out of left field. Didn't expect him to be as significant a guy as he was, and he was just fun to watch. To totally not answer your question.
No, you're good though.
I didn't hear the tag on there, but yeah, he was my most fun guy to watch. Minka's definitely, I think, as far as just overall excitement because of how good he is. Minka's maybe the most enjoyable watch from that perspective. But as far as just like kind of finding a guy that you aren't real familiar with and just watching him go. Yeah, that's, you know, and a guy that I thought, man, wouldn't mind seeing him in a Colts uniform. Kaiser White's one of those guys.
Right. That's interesting. Because like said, I don't think there's a lot of people talking about him either, though.
Yeah, I mean, and he could, all of these guys, I think, could go higher than they probably should just because there's not a ton of talent at safety this year. Mm-hmm. And if there are teams who have need, they're going to pick these guys up. Kaiser White is one of those guys who, you know, he hadn't played a ton. He's sort of a raw talent. Kevin White's his brother. So maybe he'd have a chance to show his brother up, Kevin White for the Bears. But you know, he has all the measurables, stupidly athletic. And you know, he could even play in sort of the nickelbacker kind of role. He's a big enough guy to do that and excel in something like that. So, you know, somebody looking for a good strong safety that maybe could slide into the second round. I don't know that he's necessarily that good. He probably needs to develop, but he could get there if teams are kind of reaching, and we know that they do that as soon as the draft gets rolling. So
yeah, for sure. Absolutely. All right. Hey, dude, great stuff. I've been reading everybody's stuff, and it was fantastic. You did a great job on these safeties, my man. Yes. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. Call, the phones are open, 574-626-8689. If you want to call us and get in on the conversation, ask any questions you guys have for us, and everything, you know, whatever you, whatever else you want to talk about. So give it a few seconds here, and then we're going to get into your calls. All right, guys, like I said, phones are open, so give us a call, 626-8689, if you guys have something you want to say. Chris, just overall, what is your main thought on everything that Ballard has done so far up to this point? I mean, you're grading him in his first couple years, and, you know, first year, full year. Where do you go from there?
Well, I mean... It's been a little bit frustrating because, you know, he kind of got saddled with this coaching staff from last year. And I think if that hadn't happened, I think what he would have done in year one would have been completely different. It would have been a different look. But I think we're going to get a chance to see. And we kind of looked over this draft class, and it's been a little bit disappointing. But I think we're going to get a chance to see in his ideal scheme just how good his first draft class was. Maybe this year and maybe next year is going to be the real tell. I mean, we're going to have to see what he does in the draft this year. But I mean, I like the culture and the attitude that he's brought to the organization. I don't think you can look blindly and say like, oh, well, you know, we like that, so let's forget about the fact that the draft wasn't great. And, you know, that's definitely true. The draft, I mean, there were some misses. I tend to think that some of those misses are going to surprise people and not actually be,
there won't be misses. In the end. Yep.
I think Quincy Wilson is going to be good. I mean, all the tape that I watched on him, I did not see a player who belonged on the sideline, and broke down a couple different games of his early on in the season and did not see an indicator that he was a guy who should not be playing for the Colts. So I don't know what happened there. And obviously there, you know, maybe there are disciplinary issues, but I fully expect him to surprise some people and get rolling this season. And there's going to be maybe some analysts who are going to be like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And how is he so good?
No, I think Colts fans expecting to be good. I think I agree with you completely, wholeheartedly too, especially on the whole outlook of the draft class. Chris, and not only that, Ballard himself, but we've got our first call from Texas. What's going on? You're on the Colts cast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I just had a quick hypothetical question. We always see in these trade-down scenarios, it's always picks for picks, and I'm just curious, if we saw Chubb and Nelson, our two primary guys we've been looking at, gone in the top five, and it comes to our pick, hypothetically speaking, if Arizona called us up and called Chris Ballard up and said, okay, we'll offer you pick 15 and Patrick Peterson for the number 6 pick, they're desperate for a quarterback, is that something you could see happening? Is it logical?
I wouldn't take just that. There'd have to be more involved, and I think quite a bit more, actually. I mean, Peterson's on the back end of his, you know, I think, well, that's a weird statement. But, I mean, I just don't think Peterson's enough. Let me put it that way. With just the 15th pick and Peterson, I need more than that. I need another one, actually, probably even the next year at least. Probably even more. I don't know. See, I just don't think that that's enough in return. I think that if Ballard says he wants to be blown away, that doesn't blow me away. Chris, do you?
Well, yeah, I agree with the value, but logistically speaking, even I have some questions, and that is, you know, we just saw, obviously this was a sham, but we just saw the deal with the Ravens, and why am I going to blank on this receiver's name? Is it Ryan Grant?
Yeah, yep.
And his whatever it was that happened with his physical. So the question that I would have in a situation like that is, what happens if you agree to this trade and then Patrick Peterson fails his physical, or, you know, you're on such a on draft day to approve these players' health and all that stuff. It's just so much harder, I think, to move a player. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a buy it as is sort of situation. And with a guy who's at the, you know, maybe he's still in his prime, but he's definitely, you know, at his prime, not arriving there. If he's there,
right,
you're just running the risk that you're getting yourself in that kind of a situation. I don't think that Ballard is going to go for a guy who is not under 25, to be perfectly honest with you, because it seems like that's been his MO is let's get younger. We're not going to pay somebody a ton of money. We're going to get guys who are on the upside of their career and develop them and build them in our culture. If this was next year and that was going on and he thought, hey, we're a few players away from really being a contender, I think that probably could be something that's on the table. But I think for this year, he is not going to go too crazy with those older players building out and filling up those holes in the roster, especially not until they have kind of set that culture and built what it is that he's wanting to build.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for the caller, my man. I appreciate it. Good stuff.
Thanks for having me.
You are on the phone with the Colts cast here from Mississippi. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Hey, guys, I got a draft scenario for you.
All right.
So you guys are now Colts GMs. Congratulations.
Okay.
Excellent. I don't know what to do with all this. I've got a lot of extra money. I just need to find something to do with, but go for it.
Bradley Chubb at second overall. The Browns take Saquon Barkley at fourth overall. And the Broncos take Quentin Nelson at fifth overall. Who is your slam dunk pick at sixth overall?
Go ahead, Chris.
I love you're going to push that on me, huh? Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Matt's going to think about it, and he's going to let me have the first go at it. Okay. Oh, man. Am I taking the pick at six?
Caller?
Yeah.
Is he taking the pick at six?
If I can't trade out, I think I'm probably going to take Tremaine Edmonds. If I can't trade back, that's probably going to be my guy. I don't feel like you're really getting stuck with a player there, but he may be the guy with the most upside in this draft. He's got crazy speed and athleticism. I think he's a guy who could make a pretty significant difference on the Colts team immediately, and I don't know that he'd be too much of a reach.
I'm not going to argue with you because it's my pick too. I mean, I love him. I do. I mean, and there's a lot of people pointing out some of his misgivings, but I take him. I mean, I just think there's just way too much potential, and I think really early potential. That's the thing.
Isn't he like 19?
Yeah, he's so young. But here's the thing: I think people are saying he needs this and that. When he's going to need more discipline as far as in his coverages and all this stuff. And I don't disagree necessarily, because first and foremost, these guys are all going to be learning more than they've ever learned in their life, probably in the first, half of a season. I think he's an impact player by week eight. I just do. I think he's that talented and that gifted. I think it would be excellent, actually, to be quite honest with you. So that would be my decision without question. So thank you for the caller from Mississippi, from Tennessee. We got, you're on the Colts cast with Matt and Chris.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. So I just wanted to bring up from the crowd that has concerns about Ballard,
mm-hmm.
or just not about Ballard, just about some of the moves. I'm not really an internet person, but I've been hanging around on the site lately. Because it's a good site. You guys do good work.
Thank you.
But thank you. It's free. I've seen a lot, the internet's an angry rage pit, but I've seen a lot of, infighting over people who are just, like me, who see the Jonathan Hankins, we see the, what's his name, Banner last year. There was also the punter that he signed for a kind of rich contract last year, and they dumped him for Sanchez, mm-hmm. if I recall. I don't know. I feel like, just as a Colts fan, there's this air out there that Ballard has to be Jesus Christ reborn. And I don't know. I feel like that's, why do we think that? What is the objective evidence that he's really good at his job?
So are you in the group then where you think that he should be cut some slack, or are you in the group that's kind of needling him for these decisions?
I have concerns.
Okay.
I have concerns, you know. And the only thing I want to say here, jump off the phone for you, but like we hear about Eberflus was his guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that wasn't McDaniels, that was Ballard, is what I kept reading everywhere. And Eberflus wants to go back to a Tampa 2 defense that, you know, the new influx of offenses and quarterbacks that could make throws outside the numbers 15 yards down the field, like it killed the Tampa 2.
Right.
Like, nobody just runs a base Tampa 2 anymore. Lovie Smith tried it in Tampa, and that was, like, the worst defense I've ever seen. Like, that just – it's questionable judgment if that's, like, his big goal. Like, things like that is just – I don't know. It makes me nervous.
All right, let me start at the back end here real quick. As far as the Tampa 2, I'm not a fan of that either. I like the 4-3 front. I'm not a fan of it being a Tampa 2 style. There's not really much more to say about that. I think there's too much that goes into building that, and I don't know if it's sustainable for how long with a specific group, to be quite honest with you. No matter what they were going to run, they didn't have the personnel for it anyway. So, I mean, that doesn't
–
either way. But if we go to the Zach Banner, that was an awful pick. I'm not holding it against him. Everybody gets a crappy one. That's his mulligan as far as I'm concerned. I like the rest of the draft without question, so I'm not even concerned really with it. But I hated the pick. I hated it from the jump. As far as Ballard getting rid of Hankins, I didn't really understand that either, but I'm not holding it against him. He's doing what he's doing to build what he's doing. I don't agree with it because I think everybody needs a run-stopping defensive tackle regardless of what front you're in. And I think he's proved that he was pretty damn successful in it. So that I don't agree with it, but you know, nobody's calling us GMs except the first caller that we had tonight. That's the only person who's ever, you know, accused us of being a GM. And then, you know, as far as anything else, I'm giving him the I'll complain about it for sure. That's what I do. But Ballard's extremely, as far as I'm concerned, he's done excellent. I mean, he's done excellent so far. I have nothing negative to say about him, mainly because we all dealt with Grigson, and that's, you know, punishment enough, I think, for a fan base for as long as we've had to. I agree. You know, every GM's going to have holes in it. Every GM's going to have holes in their plan occasionally. This, to me, what we've seen so far as any of the decision-making, that to me, it's not even enough really to bat an eye long-term. Like I said, I'll complain about it if I don't agree with it up front. But overall, long period, even though it's only been a year, you know, I'm still well in Ballard's court.
Right on, man. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call, man. We appreciate it. A couple of you guys are continuing to try. I'm sorry. Trying to work this as well as I can to get you all in at the time allotted. So like I said, I may bring you in and put you on hold. If I do, be patient. I'll get to you after the person that we're talking to is off. But love that you guys are calling in. This is great. Sorry for those of you who haven't gotten through so far. Like I said, doing my best, working my finger and my brain at the same time. And Chris, we all know that doesn't typically work well. So I didn't give you a chance to talk there, man. That was my fault to kind of answer his questions. Why don't you do that until we get ourselves another caller? As far as what he said, I guess you kind of did earlier. We talked about Ballard and you kind of broke down, but Quincy Wilson to me is, you mentioned him earlier, and he to me was just one, not him being the disappointment, or I mean, there was disappointments with this draft class. Hooker got hurt. Wilson didn't get to play. I don't think that it was his fault either. You know, I mean, Hairston, though, he played far better than I think almost anybody suggested that he would, preseason even. I liked him preseason, but that was just minimal amount of tape on him. I mean, Temple didn't have a lot of game film. So, I mean, you could, at least not available at the time. So you could get that. I mean, there was just, I just think he's done that very first draft class I thought was excellent without question.
Definitely.
Okay. We got our next caller. Sorry if you guys are hearing the ring here live, but from 317 from Indy, what's going on? You're on the Colts Cast.
What's going on, man?
Not too much. What's up with you?
Well, this is Jared. I just thought I'd give you guys a call. I was kind of wondering if you guys have been contacted by Kyle Loletta's agent yet. It seemed like a reasonable way to start
the digital genius here for the Stampede Blue draft guide is clogging up the airwaves for the Colts cast. Go figure, right?
Right. I just want to call and say congratulations to all you guys on all your hard work. Obviously, I got the joy of reading it all and kind of combing through it. And first, I just want to say thank you. I learned a lot. And I don't think I've ever gone into a draft with this much information in my head. Almost too much, right?
I'll bet. Yeah, you guys spent a lot of time combing over this, so you had to look at all the stuff that we jacked up and fix it. But man, you did great yourself. Like I said, the designer of the draft guy, Jared, on the horn with us right now. But yeah,
the unsung hero of the draft guide, because he had to do the thing that nobody else wanted to do, which was to sift through all of it and try to make sense of all of our nonsense. You definitely should give him some love.
Hold on, you guys. Start over, Jared. You two are walking over each other.
No, my bad. I can't hear the other person.
Oh, he can't hear you, Chris.
Oh. That's man, I'm trying to give you props here, and you can't even hear me. Like that's terrible.
My question is, I'm hearing a little bit of chatter regarding the quality of quarterbacks, and that my brain says Darnold 1, Mayfield 2, and then with Chubb, Barkley, Nelson being the best other non-quarterback players in the draft, that we may be looking at the 6th pick and not have any of the guys that, especially Stampede Blue, has kind of honed in on as what look like our options there. And my question for you, and of course, let's see what happens. What about Roquan Smith at 6? Is that overvaluing that player, or given our dearth of middle linebackers or linebackers in general, that seems kind of like a no-brainer if those guys are all gone?
Jared, I like Roquan at 6, but I think I let me rephrase that. I like Roquan Smith a lot. I think he's a top 10. I think he has top 10 pick value. Just my opinion. I have not watched him as much as I think it was Jake that did our linebackers for us, Arthur. I did not watch that much on him. I watched plenty before. I have not watched it with intent or anything like that. But you have to love everything that this dude brings. He's an exciting linebacker. Right. We talked about Chris and I have talked about Tremaine Edmonds here earlier on the show, and I think mm-hmm. that Edmonds is a big pick, and he could be a top 10 pick too. These guys just bring mm-hmm. so much talent. It's hard for me,
right?
Because somebody would say, well, maybe at 11 or 12, maybe not at 6. I'm like, oh, well, what's the difference, man? If you're getting an all pro player right. inside the top 10, and that's just the guy you like mm-hmm. and that's the guy you have rated then, or you know, highest, then do it. I mean, you don't ever let another person's board affect yours. And that's how they're going. So if Chris Ballard's got Roquan Smith as a top 7, top 8 talent overall in this draft, I'm not arguing with him, because I think Roquan's going to be a great linebacker in the NFL, and I think he's going to be a standout. I don't think that he's just going to be a good rotational guy. So I think that if Ballard feels that way, jump on it.
Agree. And then I'll let you go and let our other callers hop on here. But I also wanted to say I have a little conspiracy theory that I wanted to posit, and I'll just let you ride.
All right.
We announced publicly Frank Reich comes out and has this big, hey, we're going to move on from Frank Gore, you know, the GOAT. We're going to move on from him. And then after that, trades out of the 3, gets 3 second-round draft picks, and that screamed to me, Barkley's the pick then, right? You publicly made this big show of getting rid of Frank Gore and then followed it up by saying, well, we don't want to take him at 3, but if I can get 3 additional picks, move back just 3 spots, and he's sitting there, that seemed like a no-brainer, and I get it. It's kind of like a, well, correlation is not causation. However, it kind of screams it to me like, hey, what if you get Barkley and then 3 additional picks in the, you know, in second rounds to follow, then it's not such a bad pick, right?
Right. I don't think that Barkley would be a bad pick either way. But
you know how the fans are so far. They're like, oh my God, you don't take a running back at three.
Yeah, but if,
like, okay, like I can secede that argument, right?
I mean, there's an argument for everything. That's the fun about the draft. That's right. The beauty of it. I think they made a big old deal about it. And I wouldn't even say they made a big old deal about it. But they did what they do when somebody it's Hall of Fame caliber goes away from the team. He deserves it. And I think that was it. I think that was nothing but respect for that guy who came in there and expected to have a ring on his finger from the Colts to begin with by now with Andrew Luck. That's why he came. That's why he went. That's why he didn't sign with Philly. So, I mean, you know, he wanted to come with a young quarterback he thought could blow it up. He was right. They just didn't win a Super Bowl. And then the team fell off after he gets hurt and all the other crap and terrible coaching and blah, blah, blah and all that. So that all comes with it. Now, Barkley, as far as that, I wouldn't say that it screamed that they were going after Barkley. No, because the running back class of this draft is what it is. To me, I mean, you could get you could get guys.
There's four or five guys that you're like, yeah, he's fine.
Right. But if Colts wanted to trade up for even a guy that they think maybe they think Darius Geis is a playmaker that they would trade up for, use one of those two second round picks to do it. I think that that's a possibility. If they think he's a playmaker, get him in the back end of the first round or in the middle of the first, or, you know, wherever he's going to go, you know, who knows, maybe. But maybe they get another guy in the second round, the third. I mean, there's going to be picks. There's going to be running backs for days in this draft, and I think a good four or five of them are going to end up being long-term options for some teams. So, Jared, we're going to jump off with you, brother. But thank you for calling in, my man. We appreciate you.
Gentlemen, have a good night. I'll be listening.
Absolutely. You too. Guys, we still got more to do, so get your phones out. Give us a ringy-ding. Somebody's tried to call, and I missed them because of Jared, but we'll live. So what are your thoughts on Roquan at six? Are you a no-go on that?
I would be fine with it. I'd be thrilled with it, actually, because it does fill a need. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm like you. I mean, if you're not going to get upset that if they took him at 10 and you'd be fine with it, what difference does it make if they take him at six?
Right.
You know, I mean, if you're getting a possible all-pro player and all signs point to the fact that he has that kind of potential, and it's definitely a serious need for the Colts and a need at this, you know, with this type of defense that they're wanting to run, it's a significant position. So you take him if there and the guys that you're thinking are higher value are not there. So yeah, I'd be totally fine with it. And I'd be very excited about it, actually.
Yeah, me too. So, so let's look at the fourth pick in the second round, fifth pick in the second round. And then where are they at after that?
17th, I think, 17th. Right?
That's right. Is there one of those first two picks in the second round that you do the fourth and 17th? Do you package those to move up for a playmaker yourself? Do you trade one of them and go back? Is there something you think you could do with that 17th pick in the second round to get yourself back into late end of the second round, as well as not have to move back too far, possibly something with the Bills? Or do you think you'd be stuck with a third rounder out of that? I mean, there are so many things, Chris. I don't even know why I'm asking you this, because we're all going to answer our own questions by dancing around this anyhow. But this is one of the, I think that number three, or that first initial trade from 3 to 6, has done everything for Chris Ballard's brain, to be quite honest with you, because he can go in now, he can go in 100% relaxed and take everything as it comes. This board is going to have five of the top 10 players on it, probably overall, but only two of maybe three. I mean, I think a worst case scenario, three non-quarterbacks go in the first five picks. I mean, that is absolutely, and I don't even know if that's possible. Maybe just two.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Where else do they go after that? Where does it, I mean, is there anything on that doesn't like just jump out to you and say, now he's got to really work these picks? Or is this an absolute sit on your couch and have your phone ringer on, you know, the entire time?
Yeah, I think he has absolutely set himself up to just kind of knock it out of the park. So if he gets Nelson or Chubb or Barkley even at six, he looks like a rock star, because everybody thought he's going to take one of those guys at three.
Yeah.
So he just literally got whatever guy he was going to take anyway and got to move back and collect some more picks in the second round.
Yeah, I agree. And
to answer Jared's running back thing too, I think that second round, that plethora of second round picks is going to mean maybe that they take a running back in the second round.
Yeah.
To me, it didn't signal Barkley, but that maybe they would be looking for one of those guys sometime in there. Really hoping Sony Michel. I've not been been real secretive about my man crush on Sony Michel. So, it'd be pretty cool if he was in a Colts uniform in my mind. I think I might have to get that jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, keep in mind, if you call in, I'm going to put you on hold if we're talking. So if I do, you don't have to hang up. Just hang on a minute. I'll get to you. We've had a few of them hang up from that, but we're about to close them up here. We're going to take calls for another 5 minutes or so, Chris, and then we'll get out of here and let everybody get to sleep. But I just think this is one of the most exciting top tens in recent history for the Colts. I mean, you only have one pick. I mean, it's not like you've got the first and fourth like the Browns, but you've got so many options for everything that's going on. We've got our caller back. What's going on, man? You're on the Colts Cast.
Hello. Sorry. I got hung up because it sounded like it was breaking. I was screeching a little bit.
Oh, but, no, you're all right. What's going on?
Ask a different sort of question.
Mm-hmm.
I know everybody talking about we have our three locks we love. Obviously, a lot of people love Bradley Chubb. You know, I think he's a good run defender. I love what he brings as a total edge package. You know, you talk about Barkley. He's a running back, but he's still a really good player. Quentin Nelson. But to me, if we're running 4-3, and to me, it's a position that's becoming more and more important, in my opinion. I think Maurice Hurst should get some serious consideration at 6. I think he's the best pass rusher in the draft, regardless of Chubb, Harold Landry, any edge player, period. His tape is amazing. He's had some flat-out dominant games versus Wisconsin and Michigan State. He plays with excellent pad level. He has ridiculous snap quickness. I mean, to me, he's an ultimate disruptor on passing and rundowns for a guy who's not 300-plus pounds. I just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts are on Maurice Hurst at 6.
That's interesting to me. I like Hurst, obviously. I think everybody likes Hurst at a minimum. But, man, I think that when you look at Hurst, he's not as big as a lot of the stone-cold nose tackles and one-techs and stuff like that. And he's got a little bit of that gap shooting mentality and ability in him. I just don't know if he's got the quickness. I mean, because if they're going to stress this much to get rid of Hankins, I think that they want to pick the guy who fits the exact mold that they want in the defensive along the defensive line. I don't think that they go with Hurst, who can be and is, I don't know, I wouldn't say primarily, because like I said, he's multi-talented, but I think that he's more of an eat blockers kind of defensive tackle. You don't think so?
To me, he seems more like a 3-tech, and he reminds me of Geno Atkins with how low he can get on his blocks and how it seems like he rounds guards out. He's got quickness. He's really a pass rusher to me. I don't think he's one of those nose tackles or 1-tech that eats blocks. He's the guy, I think, you let him go and you let him pass rush and take quarterbacks down.
Mm-hmm.
And I know 6 seems like a reach because it seems like it's a hard position for the NFL to evaluate because Aaron Donald, again, was another guy who had amazing tape, and he didn't get drafted as high as he should have, in my opinion. And I don't know. I think the 3-tech should be – it's undervalued as a position because it's this new generation of player that plays this position, right? Just like with some people are arguing why Barkley's valuable because there's a new generation of running back that does all 3 things and can be a threat on every single down. To me, there's a new generation of 3-techs that are elite pass rushers, and to me, they're almost, if not more effective than elite edge rushers, because you can't step up. You can step up away from that edge rusher, but you can't step away from a guy who's in your face. You know, if he beats your guard, he can beat your guard within 2 seconds. He's right in your face, and that seems like, you know, a game changer.
Yeah, I agree with you. And one of the things Chris and I earlier were talking about this on the show, that I said that I thought that guard were more, I don't even remember exactly how I said it, but I basically just said that I was more into these guards than I am into any of the tackles, not just because of that they don't meet like the threshold, but because I just think the interior offensive lineman is where it's at now because of what you just said. Because of what you're saying, the interior pressure is the new wave, so to speak, than the edge. I mean, it's not eliminated the edge. Obviously, you need a guy like Bradley Chubb, and you need a guy who can really come off that edge and bend and flatten out to the quarterback and just take him out of, you know, get the strip the ball, all that. That's the guy that everybody has, you know, the dream of in their head when they're going after a pass rusher. But some of these interior guys, man, that is extremely – way Taven Bryan, I think, is so attractive to people because he's so athletic and can shoot like nobody's business. I don't think you could go wrong with Maurice Hurst. I love him, and you're on the ball on this, and I agree with everything you're saying. You've obviously watched him, and that is the point. He is so talented. I don't know where he goes in this draft because there was the medical brought up. How important is that? He was eventually cleared. I mean, I don't know the semantics of that, nor do any of us really, but I think that that's going to be in some team's head regardless. He failed it because of something to do with the heart. Is there lingering issues? It's just not as bad as they originally thought when they, you know, failed him or what. But I think that that is going to scare a few teams off. Does he end up like Nick Fairley and having to, you know, move on because he's not passing physicals or because it's too dangerous? I think that that's still going to weigh on his draft stock. I can't imagine that the Colts would take him at 6 because of that. But then in the end, if the team clears him, then what have you got? You've got one of the best defensive tackles that I think have come out in a long time in Maurice Hurst. I just don't know where he goes in this draft, but I think that the affinity for him is as widespread as you probably think it is as well.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I love Maurice Hurst. I think Taven Bryan, I've heard that a lot. I've heard of, you know, because everybody says about every position, why I draft player X when I can get player Y in round X, Y, and Z. And Taven Bryan, to me, reminds me a lot of Robert Nkemdiche. He's a great athlete, but you still got to put it together. But
it's an interesting comparison.
I love Maurice Hurst. Great hand placement, strong guy. He can bench press offensive linemen, you know. He's the whole package to me as a 3-tech, and I think it's more important because of the 4-3 we play in to have that sort of presence on the defensive line. And edge play is very important, but I don't know. I think you could get by with somebody like Basham and Sheard on the edges for a year, you know, or maybe you draft someone in the late round. But if you have Maurice Hurst just turning it up inside, those guys are not getting a lot of attention, you know, towards them. I think that could be a formidable thing for our defense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree with you. Thank you for the call, man. It was excellent stuff. We appreciate it. Chris, what are your thoughts on all of that, man? I mean, Maurice Hurst, love. Where are you at on him?
Well, I haven't watched a whole lot of him, but, you know, what I have seen, I mean, he's definitely a talented player. And, you know, same thing. I mean, personally, I'm in the Taven Bryan bandwagon. I have the same questions and they all tie to not really understanding, like we talked about earlier on in the show, not really understanding the Jonathan Hankins thing. Like you said, I think they're going to be very particular about the kind of guy they go for those interior defensive line, guys. I don't know what that is, but we know that it's going to be tied to speed. We know that it's going to be guys who can really, get upfield, because that's what they've told us. I mean, I wrote a piece on Sampy Blue a week or two ago, really kind of breaking down all the different times that Eberflus and Ballard have said, you know, it's going to be about speed. Speed is going to be the thing. So, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like that position is definitely a need, and I know that you don't want to draft specifically based off of need, but I'm not certain that somebody like Maurice Hurst is so much better than somebody like Tremaine Edmonds or Raquan Smith or something that, like, when there's a more significant need and a player who's about equal value, I think you take the guy who fills the more significant need if their value is pretty similar.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
In the Colts spot, I just think, I mean, with somebody, Henry Anderson is not necessarily a great guy to fill that role, but I think he's proven himself to be a quality player. You know, I don't really know how Al Woods fits into this picture at all.
No,
but you've got Stewart, who you know, you'd like to see maybe step in and take a bigger role from the rookie class last year, and I don't know what his role is in that. But you know, you're probably looking at guys who wouldn't start on any other team who are right now starting in your linebacker core. So I mean, they probably wouldn't start on any NFL roster, maybe. Across, yeah. I mean, with the exception of John Simon, who is going to be fitting into a completely new role, and we don't know what that's going to look like for him. So to me, that's the most pressing area where you have to say, man, if I've got equal value of players, I got to take the guys that fill the need that's more significant, and that's the linebackers in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's talk about that for a minute, because I somewhere I wrote something about the defensive ends that the Colts have coming back. They've got both Basham and Sheard currently listed as outside linebackers. We know that probably is not going to be the case in this 4-3, that either one of them fit the scheme for a 4-3 outside linebacker. They're both defensive ends in this scheme. But that interests me because that makes, in my opinion, the outside linebacker maybe a larger need than on its own merit. Okay, think about it this way, because I'm about to piss some people off, I think. If I'm looking at the Colts, where they're at, those two are defensive ends. They go into the defensive end position. They are edge rushers, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Colts on its own with an edge, they don't have an outside linebacker right now, unless they're going to convert somebody who's an inside linebacker or just get extremely lucky out of this. So do the Colts actually value a guy like Edmonds more than they would value a guy like Chubb? And I mean, on its surface, a linebacker, an outside linebacker versus a defensive end in general, or an edge rusher, is the more value on a guy like Tremaine Edmonds, who can rush the passer but also fills a critical need at outside linebacker as well? Because there's nobody on the roster right now that, in my opinion, I like Jeremiah George. I think these guys can all move around a little bit. But I think that if they have the biggest need out of those two positions, I think they don't have an outside linebacker. They've got two edge rushers right now. One got second-year guy, one guy who played his ass off last year and cheered. You don't have that in an outside linebacker at all. I mean, you have Simon, okay? I think that that's probably where he fits, but we don't know that right now. He's going to be as in limbo as anybody, and you hit on that a few minutes ago. I'm kind of, you know, beside myself trying to think about this, actually. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely it's a legit question.
Am I talking gibberish? I mean, seriously, tell me if I am. Am I talking gibberish with this, or is this real?
No, I mean, and you know, this is where it gets crazy in the draft, because we don't really know. This is where it'd be so cool to sit into a draft board planning room for the Colts and just hear how they stack this stuff up. Do they do, you know, overall best, most talented player? And we're going to take that. If it's close, we're taking the most talented player, regardless of whether it fills a spot that we really, you know, you see,
right.
The Jets are a good example. How many times have we seen the Jets take a defensive tackle where it's been the strongest part of their team, and they take another defensive tackle?
Right.
Three or four years in a row.
Let's assume that Edmonds and Chubb are equal on their board.
Yeah. I mean, if they're equal, then you have to, like, our, it's been pounded into our brain that defensive end position is the most significant. But if you can just dump off screen passes to your running back because you don't have a linebacker who can cover the running back, it doesn't really matter if you have a really good pass rusher, because your quarterback's just going to dial up those short passes and kill you over the middle. Tom Brady has made a career of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both positions are really important. And so the question is, do you think that you can get somebody who is as good as Bradley Chubb next year to fill that role? Or do you think you can develop somebody into that spot? Or do you think that you can get somebody who does that later on in this draft and who you can develop to take that spot this year. And which one do you think is going to be harder for you to fill? And I think that maybe you're going to look at the edge rusher and say that's harder just for that reason. But that would be the only thing that I could think that would be a legitimate reason. If they're equal, you know, side to side, my preference would be, honestly, would maybe be to take the linebacker. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that that's smart. I mean, I might get myself fired. Maybe that'd be my only move as a GM, and they'd be like, "Hey, that's your Philip Dorsett. You're gone."
You could be, but I think it is valid. I think it is. The Colts really look. It's all going to come down to what they feel, and if the two guys are there, they're going to take which one they think is the more sure thing, regardless about Basham and Sheard or anything else. I think, because there are some good outside linebackers in this draft, guys like Jannard Avery, I think that he's going to be a sexy pick, I think, in the end, to be quite honest with you. I think there's a couple other guys that can fill this role and that can fill multiple roles. So they're not going to, I just don't think that they're going to run out of outside linebackers. But at the same time, it really comes down to, you think you're going to run out of good defensive ends? I think you're going to pretty quick, actually. So, I mean, the whole weighing everything has to come down. I mean, they've got their board and set up the way it is, and pretty good chance if they have two guys who are equal, they've already got their board structured in a fashion that represents if they're both still there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So,
sure.
That's that's something that's going to be fun to. I'm literally excited about this draft. I'm typically excited just because it means that we're talking about football and we're talking about the Colts draft and here are the new players. I can't wait for this one, man. I am literally waiting, like, every day. It feels like it should be getting closer, yet it's getting a step or two away. The Colts are going to have a real opportunity to make a serious haul in this draft. I mean, best option or best possible scenario probably isn't even in our heads right now, because there could be so many different trades. They're not necessarily that affect the Colts, but affect the board also, that could really turn things a lot around in the top 20. I mean, you think about that, just four or five trades in there that nobody's talking about right now are, I think, that more than possible. There are so many trades that are possible, and it's going to either be one of the quietest and most exciting, as far as quietest in trades, or it's going to be one of the most exciting with trades. And I can't wait to see. I hope that it's not even a middle ground. I hope that it's either the draft is just exciting because of the players, or that it's exciting because there are trades happening at every turn. So I just know that it seems like it can't get here quick enough.
I agree. I think it's going to be insane. I don't think it's going to be quiet. I think that the free agency period has proven that general managers are maybe getting away from that sort of conservative way that they've conducted themselves. Maybe, you know, that old guard of general managers that kind of took things a little bit more carefully. Mm-hmm. This is not that group. And we've seen some crazy stuff happen already. I mean, we've been talking about trades with regard to how they impact quarterbacks, but I mean, we haven't talked about what happens if Saquon Barkley gets to six and Ballard says, "I'm not interested in spending that sixth pick on a running back." I bet there's people who are willing to come up for a running back, and Tampa's probably going to, you know, be looking at seven maybe to take him. And so there might be somebody who wants to jump up in front of Tampa and take Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Or Quentin Nelson, if they think that, you know, I mean, hopefully he just takes Quentin Nelson, but if, you know, but he may be willing to take phone calls for those non-quarterback positions. And like you said, you know, look at the Patriots. They've made moves to get a couple of first round picks, and there's a lot of speculation they're going to try to move up and get a quarterback as well. I would really not like Ballard to give them the sixth pick, because I don't think I could ever forgive him if somehow they continued their obnoxious run with a quarterback that they got because of the Colts. I don't think I could stand for that. But, you know, I think it's going to be crazy. It's going to be one of the more fun drafts in a while for Colts fans, because we're going to get to see Ballard really, like, take that next step. And if you are on that team that has got some questions about Ballard after this draft, you're going to be able to legitimately have a beef with him if some of those guys don't work out. And if you know think that he's doing good things, then this is going to be kind of the point where you're going to get a chance to see him shine, because this is his scout staff, this is his you know, second draft. He's kind of has his, you know, his scheme in place for what he wants to do. He's got his coaching staff in place. And so we're really going to get to see what Chris Ballard values and, you know, see what he can do. And he's, you know, from everything that we can see, we got off-season workouts starting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hypothetically, everything that we've heard, Andrew Luck's going to be there. You know, we're going to have Andrew Luck, hypothetically, obviously, fingers crossed, whatever, throw salt over the shoulder, whatever things we need to do. He's going to be back, and that's going to be exciting. And so thinking about the offensive weapons that could be paired with him that are going to get picked up in this draft are exciting. So good time to be a Colts fan. We're going to be more excited once draft day is here. But yeah, definitely one of the more excited lead up to the drafts that I can remember.
I totally agree. And not only that, but I think that this time next year, we're going to have all the information that we need to be extremely judgmental of Chris Ballard, whether good or bad. And I think that it's either going to be high praise and shouting from the rooftops how much we adore Chris Ballard, or we're going to find some cracks to slide into and, you know, try to pick some things apart. But hopefully this year, this time next year, we're singing his praises, man. I'm excited for it. I can't wait. It's a good time to be a Colts fan, in my opinion. This is a massive rebuild, and things are coming along. So, Chris, thank you for joining me tonight, my man. Excellent show. Thank you, all the callers. Excellent calls. They were very good tonight. Very impressed with a lot of you guys, how much you guys are into this as well. So, obviously, if you haven't and you want to, go out and get our draft guide. It's done very well so far. We've got a lot of good reviews, so very excited about that. Rate and review the podcast. Check us out here on our YouTube channel as well. Subscribe to that and be a part of every live show as it happens. So, Chris, listeners, watchers, thank you guys all. We'll check your time next time. We'll check you out next time right here on the Colts Cast.
Closing it like we opened it.
That's right.